Welcome, everyone, to episode 422 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we are in the dog days of the regular season. So before we start our Bye Felicias for the year, we're going to take a look ahead a couple years in the future and discuss which teams we think will have the brightest future. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a man who is not feeling very well, unfortunately. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Well, I'm as sick as a dog, Brian. So this will be one of those episodes where if you can't hear my background noise, it's because I've muted everything possible in order to sneeze or blow my nose. It's going to be one of those. So I'm going to be using the mute button a lot. So pay that no mind. But you know what? I will say this. There's a silver lining to getting sick, because it does provide me the chance to make my 3-bean chili that I always make when I'm sick. Basically, it's ground beef with a high level of fat, high percentage of fat, because it just cooks so much better. It's baked beans, it's black beans, it's red beans. I don't even know what kind of beans are in baked beans. I just know they're baked and comes in tomato sauce, so like that's fine. Then a can of corn, and then we just get cracking. Put that on a bed of mash, and you're good. It's like my body is basically saying, oh, I recognize this taste. You're sick, so let's get this train moving.
You do know you're allowed to make that even when you're healthy, right?
I know, but it's like one of those things where you kind of feel a little bit sorry for yourself. Plus, it's just, it's so much protein. Like, sure. My weight balloons when I eat it, so I'm kind of reserving it to those times instead.
Gotcha. All right, cool. Well, more because we're in the stretch of the regular season where we're jockeying for playoff seating, and you know the teams are starting to tank already, there isn't a ton to discuss about the results right now. So instead, we're going to take a look ahead today. I'm framing this as which teams have the brightest future, and we can. Right. We did not share a list with each other beforehand, so we can interpret that however we want. I mean, if you want to go ahead and just tell people like what your approach was when you were selecting these teams, and I can do the same, because that could at least provide some context for our respective lists.
Right. Well, for my perspective, I went young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did too. It's like a Brooklyn Nets team with a 30-plus-year-old Kevin Durant 3 to 5 years down the road, or like a little Lakers team with a 36-year-old LeBron James, I just can't project that they're going to remain championship contenders. So I, like you, I went young. I went with teams with a ton of draft capital moving forward. That definitely pushed them higher in my list. These are teams that's like, I can't guarantee that they're going to have a bright future, but that they have the framework in place. Like if they play their cards right over the next 3 to 5 years, this is the next tier of championship contender.
Right.
So which team is number 5 on your list, Mort? Because this is, I had 4 that were guaranteed to be in, and then I really struggled with number 5.
Well, so shouldn't we both have actually 6 teams, right?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we start with like the wild card, or do we wrap it up with the wild card?
The honorable mention. I was going to, when discussing 5, I was going to explain why I didn't have 6 in that spot.
Oh, okay. Well, so to me, I'll bring up my 6th then.
Okay.
And it's the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I realize that sounds like, no, but here's the thing.
Wow.
No, there's a reason for it. There's a reason to the madness, because I knew I would get this response. The thing is, outside of Shea, right, who is fantastic, the draft picks are unknown. And so what I went in and did was I kind of weighed known productivity higher. Okay. I am not saying that Oklahoma City is going to be only the sixth best young team moving forward. Looking at historically, like Sam Presti selected, you know, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden back to back to back. So if that track records persist, obviously he's going to get some major pieces in the draft, and they're just going to shoot all the way up, maybe even to number one. So this isn't me saying that they don't have a very, very bright future. It's me prioritizing at this stage known commodities over commodities that are not known. Okay. And as much as I love Shea, and trust me, I love that guy so much, I think he's going to be a superstar when everything is said and done.
Yeah.
It's one guy, and I think ultimately for the rest of the teams that I have in front of Oklahoma City right now, they just have a little bit more at this stage.
This is Lu Dort erasure, and I am not here for it.
Well, and Poku, to be honest with you, but here's the thing. Yeah. Like, yeah, well, so I get it. Lu Dort is also there. I think that's one of those interesting situations. I mean, he's really become a solid shooter compared to where he was a year ago.
Yeah.
So that's definitely fair. Darius Bazley is also there, averaging 13.5 points, 7.5 rebounds. They're not really high percentage shooters, though. Mm-hmm. And they have Teo Maledon, who's also doing well. Like, there is a lot to like here. I'm not saying otherwise. But right now, when I look at certain other teams, their known commodities are just a little bit higher. Like, if I'm going all in on the draft capital, all that, I probably would have Oklahoma City first, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just me prioritizing known commodities.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, spoiler, I have Oklahoma City a lot higher than you do but yeah, you're right. It's like OKC is the complete mystery box team of any team. So we can get back to them later because I will come back to them on my list too. So who do you have at number five?
So at number five, I have the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's Ja, it's Jaren Jackson, it's Brandon Clark, it's Desmond Bane. De'Anthony Melton has come on strong over the past couple of months. It's Xavier Tillman. Jonas Valanciunas is playing so much better than most people even recognize. I think even Dylan Brooks is kind of cutting off just a little bit of his Kobe shots. Mm-hmm. So the roster is super intriguing. Now, I realize Valanciunas is going to be 29, so he's not super young, but the rest of the roster is, and that's why I think they could have a very, very bright future. And the pieces, more importantly, honestly, it seems that the pieces fit, right?
Yeah.
When I watch this team play, at no point do I go, wow, this is something that just does not fit the overall scheme. Like, this team has a lot of talent, but it doesn't work together. I think a lot of these components just fit. I mean, you have Ja, who's a scoring and also playmaking point guard. You have Desmond Bane and De'Anthony Melton, who can play off of that. Jonas Valanciunas is the post-up guy. You don't really have a whole lot of that. Brandon Clark is kind of like new-aged Taj Gibson. And then you have Jaren Jackson, who I think down the line is going to be one of the most influential two-way bigs. So there's just a lot there that you can point out and go, this is sustainable. And then Xavier Tillman, he just seems to be one of those, you know, hard hat, lunch pail type of guys who can do a little bit of everything. Maybe there is some positional overlap with him and Brandon Clark, but that doesn't really matter to me. It's talent, so you can always kind of build your team from there. Mm-hmm. But the Grizzlies I have at number five, I really like where they're going.
Yeah, and with Tillman and Clark in particular, you know, if you have, assuming Valanciunas is not part of the long-term future, again, for like 3 to 5 years down the line, and it's Jackson, Clark, and Tillman, you know, that's 96 front court minutes. Divide that between three guys, and there you go. You're pretty set. So,
it's
not necessarily a huge concern because you're right. Jaren Jackson is versatile enough that he can really play either position.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. They're in contention for that number five, number four slot for me. So I was actually torn between three teams at five. And it was the New York Knicks were one of them. And I did not end up picking them because as good as they have been this season, a lot of that is driven by Julius Randle, who is under contract for only one more year. And if he continues to play like he has, He is in line for a massive raise over the $19.8 million he's going to earn next season. They have R.J. Barrett, who has been very good this year, a lot better than he was as a rookie. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you know, quickly, also, great pick at number 25. Other than that, they are a blank slate, and that could be seen as either a good or bad thing. You know, they have Kevin Knox, who I still don't really know what to make of him. We haven't seen...
Oh, I'm out.
Fair enough. Yeah, we haven't seen much out of Obi Toppin this year, and, you know, maybe he takes over for Randall if Randall leaves and gets too expensive, but if that's the case, the Knicks probably backslide a lot, too. So, you know, that Toppin pick is looking more questionable by the minute. And, you know, look, the Knicks have been really good this year, and maybe that makes free agents start to think, oh, okay, the Knicks are back. We'll actually consider them as a real destination. But there's also the chance that, you know, they look at the free agent market this offseason, and what once appeared to be star-studded is star-studded no longer. And maybe, you know, Tom Thibodeau is emboldened by the success they've had this year, and they push that into a more of a win-now window than what they should be. And they go shell out a ton of money for a 35-year-old Kyle Lowry or a 31, 32-year-old DeMar DeRozan and try to accelerate their rebuild and then have it come crash and burn down. You know, Tom Thibodeau, as we've seen in his last destination, tends to wear out his welcome after a couple years as well. So as Sonny
That was going to be my question to you. Did you take into account the first-year bump of Tom Thibodeau?
Yeah. So as Sonny as things seem now with Tibbs in the Knicks, 3 years down the road, are we going to be saying the same thing? Or is it going to be, okay, Tibbs has worn out his welcome. Guys are sick of playing 38 minutes a game. You know, I just can't in good conscience say, you know, given the last 20 years of evidence, I can't say I feel confident that the Knicks are going to take this next step forward. Right. But the first step is really promising. I don't want to, you know, rain on the Knicks fans' parade right now, because what they've done this year is great. It's just I'm nervous, and I don't want to be betting on the Knicks nailing this next step.
Right. So there's a thing with Tibbs that I kind of want to point out as well. It seems that no one is talking about it, and I think this is not written in stone by any means. Of course, you can coach to however long you want, but he's 63.
Yeah.
Like, I do think at some point, maybe I know basketball is his entire life. I know he doesn't have a family, unless that's changed in recent years. Like, I'm pretty sure he's one of those internally single kind of guys. But you also have to wonder, when he gets into his 70s, which is just 7 years away, do teams want to go with that kind of age, or do they want to go with someone who maybe has an easier time to relate to players? I don't think Pop is the norm. I think he's the exception.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree with that. Especially a guy like Tibbs, who's, you know, his engine burns really hot. Is it going to stay that hot 5 years down the road, or does he finally wear himself out?
Right. I mean, this is a man who was born in the 50s, for crying out loud.
Yeah. So I just had too many questions about where the Knicks go from here to confidently put them in the top five. But they're right on the fridge. They've got, you know, two top 20 picks, or likely two picks in the 20s, most likely. They're right now 20 and 22. And given what they did with Quickly last year, there's no guarantee that they're going to, you know, not find an impact contributor at one of those spots. I think they're on the right trajectory, finally, after all of these years. But, I just want to see a little bit more from them before I say, yes, I definitely believe in you moving forward. I think you guys are not going to spend two-year $80 million on Kyle Lowry this summer.
Yeah, I didn't even have them on my list.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So here's the thing. I went, like I said, with youth. Mm-hmm. So Julius Randle is, what, 26?
Yeah.
About to turn 27 later this year.
Yeah.
And he's an unrestricted free agent after next season, if memory serves.
Yes.
Those are just, like, that's not super youthful. At the same time, you just don't know what's going to happen. Like, if Tibbs burns out there, is Randall a lock to be retained in New York, or does he go elsewhere because he does have that power to go elsewhere? Mitchell Robinson has been also a little bit hot and cold. There is some, I think it's fair to say, because we have heard this both privately as well and from a lot of people, there is a lot of things going on with him which may not make his career long for the Knicks, which, yeah, I think could be in the cards. So that's a situation that has to be ironed out, in which case you would pivot to Nerlens Noel, who's been fantastic. But Noel himself is like 26, if I'm not mistaken. So I prioritized youth, and because I did, I really didn't have the Knicks there. I get RJ Barrett, but I don't have him in the same tier as, for example, Ja Morant or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Right, right. So the other team that I wanted to squeeze in and just couldn't find the spot because of the Memphis Grizzlies, in fact, was the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Wow, okay.
I'm guessing that means you do have them on your list.
No, it means that I didn't.
Oh,
because,
okay.
Look, I love Colin Sexton. I love Jared Allen. I think they have some great pieces, but man, I don't know if they're there. They look horrid at times, even when they're healthy.
Yeah, it's really a bet on Sexton, Garland, Allen, Isaac Okoro, and Larry Nance Jr., who's also been very good this year.
Yeah.
They also, I mean, you know, depending on how the lottery shakes out, right now they have the fifth worst record, so they're likely looking at a top 10 pick. So, you know, whether that gets them one of these top five guys or whether they slide down in that next tier, they should have an opportunity to add one more key piece to this core. But yeah, I mean, I think the concern with them is, you know, one, they still have the Kevin Love albatross contract on their books for two more years, and he is just completely checked out at this point. And these young guys, you know, this is the problem when you build around so many young guys. At some point they become due for a payday. So Jared Allen is due this summer. He's a restricted free agent. Colin Sexton becomes eligible for an extension this summer. He'll be a restricted free agent next year, if not. Darius Garland the year after that. You know, Nance is signed for two more years. Chetty Osmond signed for three more years. So they've got, you know, some young talent for the next couple seasons. But, you know, they have to start making some decisions. Are these guys the long-term building blocks for our next good team? You know, we're reaching that point with it really within the next year, where especially with the Garland Sexton backcourt, like they've shown some really promising flashes this year, but you know, Cleveland
offensively,
but Cleveland is approaching the point where it's like, okay, can these two guys be our backcourt of the future, or do we have to move on from one? Also, I mean, it's unfair to hold them against this given the circumstances around this, but just letting go of Kevin Porter Jr., considering how good he's been in Houston, like I would feel higher about Cleveland's future if Kevin Porter Jr. were still there.
Yeah, but knowing the story, and it's not something we should talk a whole lot about, I think, it was probably for the best.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those two teams were my honorable mentions. And then, like you, I went with Memphis at number five. They would have been higher for me if we saw a fully healthy Jaren Jackson this season. But because we didn't, because he's coming up for an extension this summer, you know, I feel like if he were healthy, he'd be a max or near max guy. I don't think Memphis can give him that contract right now. And that worries me.
Yeah. I think they're going to. I mean, they're going to regardless, right?
Probably. Like, I don't think they max him, though. Do you?
I kind of think they do.
Oh, okay.
No, well, I mean, look at his shot profile. Look at the,
I know.
Look at the improvement.
The talent, like, based on the talent, I would. But
yeah,
I don't know. Given the health concerns, I think they might be a little nervous.
Right. And also, so here's the thing. I'm going to go off on a tangent here maybe, but you know how the league has deprioritized rebounding?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I still would like my bigs to be able to board.
Right. And like,
I understand he plays next to Jonas, who gobbles up everything, but even so, I mean, last year, playing 28 and a half minutes per game, he was rebounding 4.6 times per game. I mean, like, no, that's not enough.
Yeah. I like the pieces for the reasons you mentioned, but at, you know, the teams that I have higher, I just think, yeah, I mean, I went with them for now, but look, right. I really, really like what Memphis is building too. It should not be seen as a slight against Memphis.
And you know, before we continue, I think it's also important to just note that we actually have one more team that is unknown that we can throw into all this, and that is whoever gets Cade Cunningham.
Yes.
Like, this is a team to be named later. Whoever gets Cade Cunningham, like, will be in the conversation of being on this list at the very least.
And that's why I wanted to do this now before the playoffs, before the lottery, to kind of see where things stood before the Cade lottery. Because, not even Cade, but, you know, Evan Mobley, Jalen Green, Jalen Tuck, like, all of these really promising top five guys are going to change this list in a couple months. So it's fun to have this as a snapshot to look back on.
Right.
So let's go to your number four team, Mort.
The Atlanta Hawks.
Oh, okay. I had them at four as well.
Okay, nice. Well, then we can just stick with them as we discuss number four here.
Yeah.
Obviously, Trey. I think we've reached that point now where Trey is getting a little bit underrated. At least on NBA Twitter, it seems that, because they're not winning, or, you know, to the extent that they were expecting to, he's like becoming a guy who's getting poked at a little bit, and because of weak defense and all of that. Okay, this is still a guy in his third year who's averaging 25 and 10 and 4 rebounds and getting to the line at will, can drain shots from the logo. Like, I get he had a better season last year, but he also has better teammates this year, and a lot of them are super young. Like, DeAndre Hunter, to me, when he's healthy at least, it's only been a 20-game sample size this year, looks like the type of guy who could be, you know, the number two guy for that team moving forward. Not in terms of being the second scorer, but the second most important player, because he's a two-way guy.
Yeah.
So, like, John Collins, if they retain him this summer, will always probably have more stats. But that doesn't really mean a whole lot to me. I think Hunter is better overall. They also got Kevin Huerter, who's quite solid. Clint Capela is a little bit older than the rest of them, but he's still young enough that you can go, there's definitely some years left, like 4 or 5 years.
And he's been really good with them.
He's been fantastic, leading the league in rebounds.
Yeah.
2 blocks per game, 15 points on almost 58% shooting. He's been good. Collins is a bit of a question mark because he's going to go into this summer as a restricted free agent, but you know, I honestly don't. You and I have talked a lot about, like, the power forward position and guys who need to best set up and who aren't playmakers, that they're losing a lot of ground in the NBA these days. So I don't think he's as crucial as a lot of other pieces. I think you could easily slide DeAndre Hunter into the four full time if you lose Collins, and you won't miss a beep. Then they will just go smaller, shoot more from outside, and just be more versatile. I don't think you miss a whole lot there. Bogdan Bogdanović has proven, not surprisingly, that he's a damn good basketball player. who routinely gets undervalued. I think there's something here. Onyeka Okongwu has not played a whole lot because the front court has been loaded. So if Collins leaves, that's another spot that opens up for him. Mm-hmm. And I think he's one of those guys who just can't miss when he gets a little bit more experience under him. So I really like where the Hawks are at this point in time. I was kind of looking at, do I want to have them over Memphis? And then I kind of went back to the whole idea of who's the better player right now, Ja or Trey?
Yeah.
And as much as I want to go Ja for a variety of reasons, I think Trey right now is just better because the offensive volume that he has is just so much higher than Ja. So I got to go Trey for now.
Yeah, and I also believe in the Hawks supporting cast a little more than I do Memphis for now.
Right, right.
Like, as you said, Collins is the big mystery, given, you know, he wants a max or near max contract, and the Hawks weren't inclined to give it to him. He's been in trade rumors for, you know, the last year plus at this point. Mm-hmm. They have matching rights, so, you know, maybe it's a situation that we've talked about in the past where, you know, you match him to trade him later. Like, I don't think he's going to be on the Atlanta Hawks 5 years from now. But right. I think they'll be able to get something of real value for him. Like, I don't think they're going to let him walk this summer for nothing.
Right. So a team that likes him a whole lot, by the way, because I think this could be interesting, that's the Minnesota Timberwolves. They are apparently all in on John Collins, and I don't really know why. I think the Wolves are just trying to build a team that's all offense at this point.
Yeah, I think it gives up 150 per game, every game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But to me, I kind of think the Hawks may have made a mistake by not trading him at the deadline, because knowing that the Minnesota Timberwolves were out there, they could have much easily facilitated a trade because Collins is still on his rookie contract. So you could very easily have figured out a trade because of the salaries and whatnot. And given that the word was, and I heard this from numerous people as well, that they were in on Collins, you probably could have set your own price point at that point. So I'm a little bit surprised that he was retained. And I don't know what that signals for the future necessarily.
Well, maybe they could work some sort of like Collins for... I would have to look at the Timberwolves books before I suggest this. Assuming they could make the math work somehow, but like a Collins for Malik Beasley sign and trade.
See, that's funny you mentioned that, because you and I brought up Malik Beasley as someone the Hawks should be interested in because of his shooting prowess. That could be interesting.
Yeah, or even, you know, I'm doing very bad back of the napkin math here, but maybe the Wolves throw in Ricky Rubio as well to help give the, you know, the Hawks a lot of the concern with them right now is the offense dies without Trae Young on the floor. So
wait, Rubio's not a free agent?
No, he signed for one more year.
Interesting. I actually thought that was non-guaranteed.
It might be. No.
Looks like he... No, he's on the books. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I actually thought that was non-guaranteed. And then I already kind of presumed that he was going to be a free agent this summer because Minnesota probably wouldn't retain him. But no, he's on the books. That might actually be a major asset for Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, for salary matching purposes, if nothing
exactly.
else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. That changes the entire fabric of what they can do. That my mind is spinning now because of ideas. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Well, back to Atlanta, because I think you're right about DeAndre Hunter. It sucks that he got hurt because he was just gangbusters at the start of the season, and then, you know, the rails have kind of come off since because he just hasn't played a ton. I really do like Kevin Huerter a lot. You know, he is another one where it's like, can I confidently project that he's going to be in Atlanta 3 to 5 years? No, because he's up for an extension this summer. He'll be an RFA next year. You know, Trae is also up for an extension this summer. I am pretty going to go out on a limb here and say he is a pretty safe bet to get a max deal. So he's definitely in. I don't know that Huerter gets an extension unless it's a team-friendly one. And this is part of the reason why I had Atlanta slightly lower than these other teams. It's similar to the Cleveland thing where, you know, you're at the stage where you've assembled all of these promising young guys, and now we've reached the point where it's like, okay, time to pay up. You know, Trey's getting maxed. Do we retain Collins at the price point that he wants? Do we do that with Huerter too? Hunter will be up for an extension next year. Cam Reddish is up for an extension next year. What do we do with all these guys? Which guys are worth building around? And then, you know, Bogdanović is at least young enough, or, you know, he's under contract for 3 more years, so he is going to be part of their future. Gallo is turning 33 in August and is only under contract for 2 more years, so, you know, maybe they can flip him for value next year or the year after that. but he is, you know, when I'm taking their long-term future into account, I am not considering Danilo Gallinari part of that. So, you know, the age of the supporting cast with Gallo, Bogdanović, Capela is, you know, part of why I have them slightly lower than some of these other teams, because it's just like, you know, I can't confidently say that they're going to be part of the next great Hawks team. But, you know, honestly, the Hawks, like, they might get dinged a little bit because they might be on the rise sooner than this exercise is looking at. Like, you know, they're going to be in the playoffs this year, and they, based on what they've done, how they've weathered the storm throughout all of these injuries, like, they have been a very good team, and they're going to be in the playoffs next year too, barring catastrophe. So I think, you know, they might be, I don't want to say on the downswing in 3 to 5 years, but like, their rise is going to take place sooner than some of these other teams, and that's going to penalize them in this exercise, fair or not.
Yeah. No, I hear you on that. It really is important that they utilize the assets that they have right now to optimize for the future. They did take the whole Boston Celtics approach of having a foot in two camps at the same time, and you have to wonder if that's beneficial to them in the long run. But like, I just keep looking at the main young core, and I'm going from there, because it's a matter of having those assets as well. And you could argue as well that people would be saying, well, more then why don't you have OKC higher if you're looking at assets, because they have a ton of them. True, but when you have the twosome of Young and Hunter just already by just those two guys who are locked up for, well, Trey will be locked up, and Hunter, I presume, will also get extended because he's too good to not have there. I mean, he's playing at one of the most crucial positions in the NBA. He is playing the brand of basketball that all 30 teams covet. So I have to assume he's like a mainstay. And then you just have like the plethora of talent alongside of that that you can use in facilitating trades and whatnot. So the established value is there for them, which isn't present in Oklahoma City yet. So no, I totally agree with you. It's a matter of how they figure out how to prolong that window.
Yeah. And going back to the Trey point quickly here, I agree that Trey is better than Ja Morant right now. But when I was looking at Trey, particularly against the team I have third on my list, I do think it's fair to ask if the style that Trey plays, where he's just like so ball dominant, if that's going to, I don't want to say dissuade free agents from coming to Atlanta, and because maybe they might not have cap space to worry about it. Like, if they pay up all these young guys, they're not going to have money, so it's not going to be a problem. But, you know, are players going to want to flock to play with Trae Young like they will some of these other guys that we'll discuss? Yes. That I don't know.
Oh, I know. They will, for one reason. He's a clutch client.
I thought you were going to say the lemon pepper wings in Atlanta.
No. Well, that too. No, but, and that's actually a fair point. It's in Atlanta too. That's just one of those favorite cities for NBA players. But like, when you sign with Clutch, it's a family operation in the sense that they definitely talk about getting together. Mm-hmm. And that's not me undermining like the basketball position of this. I think Trae Young is such a willing passer. I mean, he's averaging 9.5 assists. He's, of course, he's a willing passer. Like, if he gets someone in there who is an equal superstar, but someone who isn't necessarily ball dominant, like, just theoretically here, I'm not saying he will get there, but someone of the ilk of a Karl-Anthony Towns or Anthony Davis, someone like that, I think he could definitely work with that. Absolutely. That wouldn't surprise me one iota. Plus, and this is where I think NBA Twitter has grown too harsh on Trey, we kind of sit here and act as if though he's a finished product. Like, he's not. He's going to refine himself. At some point, he's going to realize, oh, maybe if I am not that ball dominant, I can get other guys who are crucial involved. And lo and behold, we're winning because of that. I think we, generally speaking, underestimate just the realization pattern of NBA players as they grow older. So many of them begin to realize at some point, maybe it's not a good idea to average 30. Maybe it's a good idea to sacrifice a little bit and get others going, because I win because of that. Like, yeah. When have we ever seen a player who is winning at an insane rate, like championships and whatnot, who goes, screw this, I'd rather average 30.
Yeah. No, it's a fair point. It's not, look, I didn't ding them that much because they're still on my list, but it was just...
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to my number three team in a second, and that I think that'll help explain why I have that concern relative to this next team.
Okay.
So who do you have at number three?
The Boston Celtics.
Ooh, okay. I left them out deliberately.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That is your Philadelphia fanhood talking right there. My God. Yeah. How can you leave them out when you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on your roster?
Have you seen them this year?
I have. Have you seen that Jason Tatum just dropped 60?
I did. That was unfortunate. Okay. But, yeah. I don't know. I mean, look, Tatum and Brown have been healthy for a lot of the year. I know Tatum had a brief absence earlier, and he's still dealing with some side effects of COVID. He's also fantastic. Those two guys are great, but they should be better than they are this year, and it's at least reason to be like, what's going on here? Why is this team underachieving to the extent that it is with those two guys being as good as they've been?
Yeah, you know what? I think that's overplay for one reason. They are so young that they also have to figure out how to play with one another given their newfound roles. I mean, so I was looking over their numbers. Tatum started out as a rookie averaging about 13 points per game.
Mm-hmm.
Jaylen Brown only cracked 20 last season. He was starting out at like 6 points per game and then had 2 years following where he was also in like the 14-13 point range. So now going from that, is that's an entire transition in and of itself, that both guys are essentially 25-point scorers.
Yeah.
That takes time. And I think we're sitting here and forgetting just how much guys need to acclimate to one another when they grow and they actually become better. Like, both of those guys have absolutely sacrificed one another, but they also shoulder a certain level of responsibility that they didn't shoulder just 2 years ago. So we're looking at that and going, you know what? This is going to take time. This is going to be the two of them moving forward as the main top-tier guys on that team, and everyone else has to kind of get in line. And it also muddies the water that you have a Kemba Walker there who doesn't fit them from an age perspective, who has had a bad knee. This is a matter of now pivoting. If you're asking me, I would pivot. If I'm the Boston Celtics, I would try to move off of guys who are older, like significantly so. I would probably say, you know what, in terms of primary main core guys to bring in, like guys who will be getting 30-plus minutes per game, they should be 27 or under. Let's not get into like 31, 32-year-olds. Let's try to figure this out. And also Robert Williams is trending now. Like, he is finding his rhythm. Peyton Pritchard has been a pleasant surprise overall. I kind of like where we're going here. I just think, ultimately, we need to give them time to gel and mesh. I mean, this has been a team that's been... There's been some roster turnover. Like, 21 players have played for this team this year. So, it's going to take some time, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've done the hardest part of any rebuild. They have two superstars in Tatum and Brown. And that's...
Right.
That is great. It is the supporting cast and their outlook moving forward that gives me concern about, can they build a legit contender around Brown and Tatum as they pivot from win now to whatever they are. You know, they started it this year. Like, trading Daniel Tice to deduct the tax was not a win now move. That was an actively harmful move to their chances of winning now. You mentioned Kemba. Kemba's under contract. He's got $36 million next year and then $37.6 as a player option the year after that. If this knee keeps acting up, he's not turning that down. And this version of Kemba that is here this year, I don't want to say he's like actively harmful, but he's not what they thought they were getting.
Correct.
Do they re-sign Evan Fournier this summer? If so, that's going to really tie up I mean, that's going to push them well into the luxury tax. Mm-hmm. Marcus Smart, the heart and soul of their defense, has only one more year before he's a free agent. Robert Williams, who I agree, he's been promising since the Tice trade in particular, he's up for an extension this summer. And outside of Williams, I just don't have a great degree of confidence in any of the young guys. Langford, Neesmith, it's too early to be out on Neesmith, but yeah, Langford, yeah. Grant Williams, Carson Edwards, you know, like Jabari Parker, he's not the answer that they're looking for. So it's just a matter of, you know, do I think they're going to hit on their picks moving forward, knowing that they're probably still going to, you know, they're not going to completely tank. So I don't think they've got a top five pick coming to them at any point. Like, they're going to have to do better with these mid to late first round picks than they have in recent years.
Right.
Like, how are they going to build this supporting cast around Brown and Tatum? I don't know.
No. And that's a reasonable concern. Where I'm going about this just a little bit more simplistic than you are, admittedly, by just looking at Tatum Brown and going, you know what, you start from there and that's fine because they're so young, you still have a lot of time to figure everything else out.
Yeah, and I might overthinking it, to be honest. Like, you know,
I think you are a little bit, just because you have to look at the you said it yourself, they have the two most essential pieces.
Yeah.
What? Kemba. Let's round that thought out here.
Mm-hmm.
If a deal shows up this summer where someone says, we'll take Kemba for an expiring contract, so you get off of him a year early, do you do it? Because when I look at the year that he's having right now, it hasn't been great, as you said. It's still 18 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and almost 3 triples per game. Some team might just be dumb enough to go, oh, there's something there still. We can do this. He's still Kemba. He just needs a change of scenery. He just needs something else. Well, do you pull the trigger on him before it's too late? And then because next year, I could realistically see him completely bottom out in terms of, you know, the player he used to be.
Right. I mean, it would depend on which player you're getting back. Like, I would want something of potential value, but, you know, going back to the Knicks for a second, let's say they look at the market. The Knicks are going to have a boatload of cap space this summer. They look at the free agent market. They're underwhelmed by their options. What if they call up the Celtics and say Obi Toppin for Kemba Walker?
I do it.
I don't know that I wouldn't do it for both sides.
Yeah, no, I honestly, I probably wouldn't do it if I'm the Knicks, because I really fear
Yeah.
that Kemba is going to drastically decline from next year onwards. So my thinking is, as long as we're right on the bubble where it could go either way, if I'm the Celtics, I just say, let's just cut our losses here. If he has some level of trade value left, let's risk it. Let's just risk the hell out of it, get him off the roster, save that money, and let's just pivot all the way through to Jason and Jalen. That's what I would do personally. If I'm the Knicks, I don't think I would take on Kemba, because he's still going to be a guy who takes up a lot of shots. If this season is any indication of the future, plus he's getting older, I just don't know why I would do it.
They watched the Big East tournament in 2011 or whatever that was.
Well, you have to understand, Brian, the Knicks are smart now.
Yeah. It's that's true. But Kemba, I think, is... If he was the Kemba that even what we saw last year, I'd feel a lot better about the Celtics. But yeah, I think it's hard for me to project the roster out beyond Brown and Tatum.
Right. I think Smart is going to stay. He seems like one of those Celtics for life kind of.
But
guys.
If he does, you know, you've got Tatum on a max deal, Brown on a near max deal. If Smart's getting 15, 20 million, like, what? That's 80 million tied up in those three guys?
Well, I mean, that's a pretty large discrepancy right there between 15 and 20, though.
Okay, 75 million to 80 million tied up in those three guys. It's still most of your cap, and like, it's just going to limit what else you can build out around them.
But that's the same issue most teams have.
I know, but most teams have a better supporting cast. Most teams haven't whiffed on all of their picks.
I actually disagree with that. I think Jalen is on a fantastic contract considering what he's doing.
Oh, I do too. But like,
if Smart is sticking around 15 and you get off of Kemba's deal and you get off of Tristan Thompson's deal and you maybe move like Romeo Langford and Grant Williams, some of the guys who haven't really panned out, I think ultimately speaking, you're going to get a core that you can move forward with. And yeah, maybe that takes a year or two where you just kind of force feed guys like Nesmith and Peyton Pritchard and Robert Williams into major minutes. But okay, they're going to be better off because of it. Like, one of the reasons that this has been problematic is that you just haven't developed the young guys. Like, Romeo Langford, when has he ever gotten a chance? Grant Williams is actually not a bad ball player. He's just getting completely maligned by Boston fans for whatever reason. Semi Ojeleye, who I actually really like, I think could be someone you could get back for cheap and who could kind of fill out, you know, the end of the rotation maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't really know why he hasn't played better in the NBA. I think coming in, he was one of those guys you looked at and going, he's built like a truck. He can shoot. He can defend. Why is this not working out? Maybe just getting rid of a lot of pieces and forcing guys into a little bit larger roles than they're accustomed to. Maybe that unlocks something.
Yeah.
I'm willing to wait.
That's fair. So for me, I had the Charlotte Hornets at number 3.
Not on my list.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Not buying LaMelo.
Not that I'm not buying LaMelo. You'll understand because the teams that I have in front just have better players than LaMelo at this point. Like, if LaMelo hits a certain point, like where he becomes a Luka or a Zion, that was just a flat giveaway of which my next teams are.
Sure,
we can talk about it. But he ain't at this point, so he's not.
Oh, we definitely had different. I'm impressed. Yeah. This is good. I'm glad we didn't share a list beforehand. So yeah,
I am too.
LaMelo, for me, I think this is what I was referencing with Trey. I think he might be the type of talent that can, like, I know Charlotte is not a marquee free agent destination.
Right.
But I think he might be the type of talent who can draw players there. I
would agree.
I mean, I know, again, this is Gordon Hayward is old, but he is signed for a couple more years. So whether they could flip him for value or just, you know, use him as kind of a bridge to get to their next, like, you know, establish themselves as a legitimate playoff contender every year, and then that can draw more interest from other free agents and say, oh, okay, the Hornets are building something interesting here. We'll consider that. Terry Rozier is under contract for one more year, so you know he's probably up for a somewhat sizable raise, but he's been very good for them.
Devontae, I just wrote an entire piece about him for Forbes, by the way, so go check that out.
I saw that, yeah. The thing that really, beyond LaMelo, that draws me to them is what Miles Bridges has done really in the second half of this season. Like, he is having a very well-timed breakout because he is up for an extension this year, or this summer, I should say. But here, Miles Bridges has started the last 14 games for Charlotte. He is averaging 19.5 points on 51.5% shooting, 7.1 rebounds, almost 3 assists, almost a steal and a block, 3.1 threes on 46.3% shooting. Is that sustainable? Probably not, but he is shooting 40.9% from three on the year.
Yep.
I like PJ Washington. I just think they have a nice, intriguing group here with those guys. And I think, again, this is really completely a bet on LaMelo Ball. It is, I believe in him that much as being that kind of transcendent playmaker that he, you know, again, he can attract free agents a couple years down the line who see what they're doing. I think Miles Bridges, I cannot imagine the famous last words, I guess, but you know, I don't think they're going to give him a max deal, but I can't imagine they're going to not try to extend him this summer. So I guess we'll see what those terms end up being, but I think he's definitely part of their long-term future as well. They're, you know, the Hornets are still somewhat of a mystery box, and I think I went for my top teams, that's kind of what I prioritized here, was you've got a somewhat blank slate. Other than, you know, Hayward, their books are really, really clean after the 21-22 season.
So, well, and this is where my concerns come in. Are they really, though?
Who do they have? Who, like, who's after?
Well, they have two free agents this summer who play significant minutes. Mm-hmm. If they lose both of them, okay, they would have a clean cap sheet, but they would also just lose out on a lot of talent. That's Devontae Graham and Malik Monk, both of whom are injecting a lot of offense onto this team, which, generally speaking, is not a great offensive team. Yeah. Now, you could make the point that LaMelo will take over most of those shots. Tyrese Rozier will get a larger responsibility. Gordon Hayward will take some of those shots. Hayward, I think, is just going to be the future Kemba Walker only for the Hornets here, just in terms of bridging like the future with the current. Mm-hmm. So that one I don't like. But ultimately speaking, losing Monk and losing Graham, if that's in the cards, if they prioritize money and flexibility and losing those guys, That's a step back in year one, and year one means next season. Okay, let's say Tyrese Rozier has a breakout, or he's already broken out. He's, like you said, he's looking at a raise after he's done. Mm-hmm. So what if a really good team has money, and they come in and go, "Hey Terry, want to get out of Charlotte? Maybe go to somewhere else," which is nice. And remind, like, I just want to clarify this. I wouldn't love that. I love the idea of guys sticking with smaller market teams. I think it's super important that smaller market teams have wins by being able to retain their own players. But I'm also saying, in reality, a lot of guys go to major markets or larger markets at the very least.
Right.
So let's say they lose Graham and they lose Monk because they prefer financial optimization. Okay, then they lose Tyrese Rozier the year after. Then they have Gordon Hayward. They have PJ Washington, LaMelo, Miles Bridges, who may, Brian, demand a lot of money like John Collins. He'll be pointing to his starter stats, and he'll go, "Look, when I'm playing, I'm a two-way force. I'm a force of nature. I get you guys on SportsCenter every single week as well."
Yeah.
Then things muddy up.
Yeah.
So that's just why I didn't have them on my list. Plus, also, I very much love LaMelo. I don't disagree with that. But he's played less than 1,200 minutes, Brian.
I know.
At the same time, I mean, I'm buying his stock. I really am.
Yeah.
But I'm not going as far as going, "Oh, this guy is going to be Luka next year." I'm not there. I need to see just a little bit more than an 1,174-minute sample of putting him into that category.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, I think how they round out the supporting cast is the big concern moving forward, and they're going to have to be very smart about it. You're right. If they let those guys go, Graham and Monk this summer, Rozier next summer, they're not going to have an easy way to replace them. So maybe it is what we talked about with Collins earlier, where you extend some of these guys with the full intention of trading them later. A lot of these teams that I picked, there is no guarantee that they actually hit on, you know, these next steps that they need to take. And, you know, the Hornets, what the most likely outcome for them may be is a 45 win, treading water, get knocked out in round one every year. But I think, you know, getting a talent like LaMelo into that franchise could be transformative. Yeah.
It's huge. Absolutely. No, we agree on that entirely. Like, if we were to make a listing just in terms of priority for this team, what would it be? I would prioritize moving forward LaMelo, obviously, mm-hmm. and then I would prioritize Miles Bridges.
Yeah.
And then probably Terry Rozier.
Yeah.
It would at least boil down to PJ Washington against Terry Rozier, where Washington would have the edge from an age perspective, mm-hmm. simply because he aligns with LaMelo a little bit more. But Rozier, man, he's so good now.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, he just doesn't get the national publicity whatsoever. But he's super good.
Yeah.
And here's my hot take. I think it might behoove them to move off of Hayward this summer.
Ooh.
Just getting that money off. Just get, like, it's the Kemba thing all over.
Yeah.
He's played well for him. He's been a huge factor in them actually being good this year. This is not me crabbing on Gordon Hayward whatsoever. He's been huge. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's played all around basketball. He's been a high efficiency player. He's been tremendous. But one of the key things about him is the fact that he's a wing playmaker. Well, you don't really need that as much now because you have LaMelo, who just broke through. And you could kind of give those minutes to Miles Bridges and P.J. Washington anyway, mm-hmm. and Rozier playing the off guard. You won't necessarily lose a whole lot. So it really boils down to what the decision is in terms of Devontae Graham and Malik Monk, because if they want to retain one of those guys as well, like, I could see that. Like, if they want to bring back Monk, for example, as this long-term six-man who just gets buckets, all right, fine. But ultimately, I would want to optimize cap space for this reason. And you and I, we have been, for the 5 years we've recorded, you and I have been banging this drum. When you have stars who are on rookie contracts, and LaMelo Ball is going to be a star, it is crucial that you optimize cap space at some point to actually make use of said rookie contract. Because when that rookie extension one day kicks in, your cap space flexibility goes to hell. Yeah. It is crucial that you get cap space when you have someone of that caliber. As long as Gordon Hayward is there, and given that you have to extend Miles Bridges, given that Devontae Graham and Malik Monk are looking for new contracts, and Terry Rozier is in line for a raise, that muddies the waters a lot. So getting off Gordon Hayward might actually behoove you to get better in the long run, even though you give up a significant chunk of talent. Yeah. This would be one of those one step back, potentially 17 steps forward kind of mentality.
That's fair. That's a good point. So who do you have at number two? Well, I think I have a I have a clear guess. It's either the Mavericks or the Pelicans, but which one of them?
Pelicans.
Oh, interesting. Okay, wow.
Well, no. I mean, look, we might as well get into like the one, number two and number number one and number two here, because there's I knew you would have this reaction, and I kind of want to talk about Dallas first.
Okay.
As the reason to why I have New Orleans a second. I believe in Luka that much.
That's fair.
That's where I am. I realize that that sounds ridiculous, but because I don't necessarily love the roster around him.
Right.
I mean, look, Dorian Finney-Smith, great value. At some point, he's going to be looking at a much larger deal. Josh Richardson is probably gone after this year. Kristaps is like, don't know if he's like the main guy for Luka in the long run. Tim Hardaway Jr. is up. Maxi Kleber, as much as I love him, is still a bit player. Now, Jalen Brunson to me is like a mainstay, but that's about it. Outside of that, there's not a whole lot on that roster that I like at all.
Right. Yeah. I mean, full disclosure, I didn't have the Mavericks in my top five.
I think that's weird. Like, when you have Luka, though, like, Luka might legitimately end up as a top 10 player of all time when everything is said and done.
Yeah, I love it. I picked Luka as my preseason MVP. It is the rest of the roster. I mean, they traded picks in 21 and 23.
It's brutal.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, apparently Mavericks Twitter is at the point where they're afraid Josh Richardson is going to opt in. He's got an $11.6 million player option, and they're actively rooting for him to opt out.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing here. I mean, Kristaps, if he stays healthy, great. But otherwise, you know, Brunson, I agree, has been really good this year, but he's only got one more year until he's a free agent as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bleak, bleak supporting cast around Luka long term.
But, Brian, that might be an asset.
That's fair.
And you know why, though? Why would that be an asset if you have a very bleak supporting staff?
Well, you're going to free up cap space at some point.
Bingo. The exact thing we just talked about with the Hornets.
Yeah.
You would have cap space. And let me ask you this. Who the hell wouldn't want to come play with Luka?
Yeah, in a state with no state taxes.
That is all income, state income tax, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Bonus there, but...
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, next year they're not going to be in a spot where they have a ton of money, most likely. But the year after, you know, right. Luka's extension will kick in, and then KP will still be on the books as well. They'll have Dwight Powell. They have Kleba at $9.1 million non-guarantee, but that's when you can really start to have some money to play around with.
Yes. So here's the thing. This all boils down to Porzingis, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
There's no way to really optimize cap space for this year, as you alluded to, with him on the roster. And even if you did, there's not a whole lot there. It's the 2022 market. What do you want to do from there? Because Luka, like you said, is going to be in the first year of his presumed max extension. Well, if you put that on the table alongside Kristaps, they occupy, what, like $67
million? Yeah, let me. I would have to give me a second.
Somewhere along those lines,
yeah,
right?
I could do the math in a minute. Yeah, well, we don't even know what the cap's going to be at that point, actually.
A guesstimate. A guesstimate between 65 and 70 million, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And so you have to figure out right now, this season, is Kristaps going to be a guy who routinely is worth 30 plus million a year for your team? If you say no, he's not. He just isn't healthy enough. He's not producing at a high enough rate. Then this year you're going to go into, like 2021, 2022, that's going to be the transition year, I think, where you move off of Kristaps on... This is the thing. What you get back, that is the big question, because he's still young enough to be able to get a haul in. This is not a Kemba Walker situation where I'm going, oh, I just need to get off of him, and if I get Obi Toppin, that's fine. Like, no, I would want something in return for Kristaps. And then I would lean hard into the trade market from there with every bit and piece that they have. So, like, let's say Dwight Powell, who is at $11 million, if he just regains his touch just a little bit next year at the trade deadline, I would optimize draft picks. If Josh Richardson opts in with his 11.6 player option and kind of plays the brand of basketball we thought he would, that's another guy you can send off for draft picks. And the reason I would do that is Luka is young enough. You can play it the other way around. Like when I said about LaMelo with the Hornets, just in terms of he's so young that you need to optimize cap space around him. Well, Luka is still so young when he enters his max that you can still build around him through the draft. He's still that young. So if you just make sure that Luka is your primary, you know, big money earner, you can get draft picks for every single one of these guys.
Hopefully.
And then you can build from there. No, I think you could. Like, if Josh Richardson is playing at, you know, a full-time starting caliber level, you could get picks for him, right? Via a contender?
I don't know. I mean, given how the last 2 years have gone for Richardson, I don't know what his value is right now.
All right.
But he's like the conceptual 3-and-D guy, but he isn't really a great three-point shooter. And we've seen now, you know, the more you ask him to create off the dribble, right, the less you're going to get in return. So it's like, I just don't know what. I don't know if he's supposed to be a starter on a really good team.
All right. I still think, ultimately speaking, if he has a bounce back year, because while I agree with you that he's not the shooter that we thought he was, I don't think this year represents his true value as a shooter.
That's fair. I guess I'm hung up on comparing him to Tim Hardaway Jr., where.
Right.
We, you know, he had those seasons with the Knicks, and it was like, okay, he's like a starter on a bad team. He's not really going to be productive on a good team. Then he comes to Dallas, and all of a sudden he's shooting 40% from three because he's getting fed by Luka. It's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, he can fit in as this, especially now we're seeing, like, as this nice super sub role. Richardson's also playing next to Luka, and he's just not had that same bump.
He hasn't, and that is absolutely fair. That said, I still think for him, it's an adjustment period. So some players are just more naturally inclined to play off of others, yeah. whereas Josh may not be, and maybe he just needs to have just another year under him. Mm-hmm. But you bring up a good point about Tim Hardaway Jr., and this is one of the things that I was also thinking about. So we agree that Tim Hardaway has definitely, even though he's played off of Luka, his shot selection has grown better. He has become yeah. a better player.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
The fact that he also dropped 42, and that was in a non-Luka game, right? I don't think Luka played. I
believe so, yeah.
Yeah. That to me proves, let me just double check, he didn't. That to me proves that there's something there. So what if a team out there is going, well, Tim Hardaway Jr. would be really good for us if we're like maybe an on-the-bubble contender.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you have a bad contract on your books. We also have a couple draft picks. So you do a sign and trade. You're saying, if you're the Mavs, okay, screw it. We'll just optimize draft picks for the next year or two. Let's get in a back contract for Tim Hardaway Jr. Mm-hmm. in a sign and trade. Because, of course, you would have to go that route, because if the team wants Hardaway on their team and they don't have cap space, you would have to go that route anyway. So why not? You say, let's give you that guy, and then we'll take some of your crap back, and all it's going to cost you is a first-round draft pick. Because that ultimately has to be their direction here. It has to be reacquiring some of the lost draft picks that they've spent over the past few years. They need draft capital. Because right now, you're looking at a situation where they have Kristaps and Luka, who is going to be extended, at which point that's going to clog up your cap sheet. So figure out ways to get draft picks. And then if push comes to shove that you get maybe a haul, I'm not saying they're going to end up as the Oklahoma City Thunder here, but if they can get just a small treasure trove of draft picks, they would still have Dwight Powell. They would still be able to guarantee Maxi Kleber's contract. And then suddenly, there are contracts that you can move around and get something good. And then using the draft picks as payment for whoever they identify. My point here being is they have a lot of avenues to go through. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just the free agency game that they can go to. They can go the draft route. They can go the sign and trade route. There are a lot of possibilities here. The one primary factor, and this is what I think drives everything, is players' willingness to play with Luka.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think my hesitation, again, it's the supporting cast, and it's, I don't think that they can get a ton of value for anyone. Right. Even if you do a sign and trade for Tim Hardaway, like, you're not getting a top 10 pick for him.
Oh, like, no. No, of course not. Yeah. Like, that would be maybe a top 20 pick.
Or right. That, like converts into a second or 2 seconds or whatever. So,
if it doesn't convert. Yeah.
Yeah. So you still have to, like, and the Mavericks with Luka, and if Kristaps is healthy, I don't expect them, like, they're going to be in the playoffs every year. They should be, or at least in the contention for the playoffs. Like, I don't expect them to ever have a year, unless Luka gets hurt, where they completely go off the rails and get a top 5 pick to add to this core. So it's similar to the Boston thing, where it's like, I really like the top talent, but you really have to nail these next few moves and nail those draft picks that are going to be in the mid to late first round.
Right.
Because you just aren't going to have a ton of flexibility, at least as long as Kristaps is on the books.
And that's why I'm proposing getting draft picks elsewhere, because you're absolutely right. The baseline is high just with Luka. Just forget about Porzingis. Only Luka, if we take that approach. Like, that's what, almost, like, as he ages, I think they're going to be like an automatic playoff team just by having him on that team. Mm-hmm. So that's why you would have to get draft picks from elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like, your own draft picks are not going to be worth a whole lot, but then what if you make a certain move with Tim Hardaway Jr. and Josh Richardson, whatever, and you end up with 2 or 3 top 20 picks in maybe a deep draft? Because as we know, sometimes we enter a draft going, well, this isn't very deep, this isn't very good, and then there you go, it was.
Like, right.
So I wouldn't hate it. It's just a matter of them hitting on those picks. Yeah. Or using them as capital for making a larger trade.
Yeah. So we I have the Pelicans at number one, so we'll get to them shortly because you have them at two. I have the Thunder at two on my list, which right. I just wanted to circle back to quickly before we get wrap up with the Pelicans. So for me, the Thunder, you're right. They are complete, like, of any team in the league, they are the biggest mystery box because, yes, they have SGA, who is going to be a star. I just really like some of these young guys. Like, as bad as they've been this year, especially with SGA and Horford out, they're not trying to field a competitive roster right now. Like, what they're doing is worse than anything that Sam Hinkie ever did. And I don't understand why they're not catching the same amount of heat for it, but that's a topic for another day. Like, we're seeing flashes from guys like Bazley and, you know, a guy like Dort. You're talking about Boston needs to throw some of their young guys into the fire and see what they can do. OKC's mm-hmm. doing that, and we're getting to see
yeah.
a Lugans Dort who's really he's had to be a primary scorer, which is not the role he's going to play when this Thunder team is good again. But he's showing that he has more scoring upside than I think anyone would have realized coming into this year. Like, he made his name for himself as kind of the James Harden stopper last year in the yep. playoffs. And, you know, he hit a couple threes, I think, in that game seven. It was like, oh my God, Lu Dort is the one hit raining threes? And now it's like, oh, he can do that. He's, you know, he's shooting 35% on 6.2 threes a game. Mm-hmm. So I like the collection. I like the supporting cast that they have. They have some high upside guys in Bazley, Dort, Malinon, Poku, who I just don't even understand. When I watch him play, it is just like, I can't figure out what he is. He's a guard in a 7-footer's body, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, no one knows what he is. I've been saying that on my YouTube channel repeatedly. Like, I don't know. You don't know. The Thunder don't even know.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
But it's great that they're just putting him to the test and seeing yeah. what he could become. It's awesome. And they're at the point where SGA is up for an extension this year, but, like, they aren't at the point where Atlanta or Cleveland is, where they have to make decisions on some of these guys. Like, Poku's a rookie, Bazley is in year two, Ty Jerome's in year two, Dort's up for signed for two more years as well. So they've got time to figure this thing out. They've got Moses Brown on two non-guaranteed years after this and a team option after that. Isaiah Roby as well. Like, they just have a ton of these young guys locked up on great contracts where
agreed.
It's not going to limit their or hinder their financial flexibility in any way. Kenrich Williams also has been very good for them. He signed for two more years as well. So, you know, for all my concerns about supporting casts for some of these other teams, like Dallas and Boston, OKC is the exact opposite. Except they have, you know, I don't think SGA you could put in the same tier as a Tatum or a Luka, obviously. But he isn't super far off.
He isn't. He isn't.
He's going to be an all-star as soon as next year. And then what I come back to is OKC has 17 picks. 17 first-round picks in the next 7 years. Like, even if they mess up half of them, or more than half of them.
More, yeah.
You know, there's a chance. Because Houston, I believe, sends the pick to OKC. If it's outside the top four this year, Houston has the worst record in the league, so they have about a 50-50 chance of keeping that pick. Right. But there's a chance that OKC walks into two top five picks this year, or, like, you know, two top seven picks. So, you know, this is one of those ones where it's like, depending on how the lottery shakes out, like, what if they add an Evan Mobley and a Jalen Green to SGA and all these young guys. Like, all absolutely. Of a sudden, you know, they could just go gangbusters next year. I think Horford's probably shown enough this season and just running out his contract by a year that they're going to flip him for value at some point. I don't think they're going to have to send a pick to get off of him.
No, absolutely not.
So it's, I know that they are far less established than a lot of these other teams that we've discussed today, but given the foundation that they have, it's almost like they are set up too well to fail.
And that, I think, is an entirely fair point. The only, and like, I just want to reiterate, the only reason that I did not have the number one was basically the known commodities. I agree with you that the players you brought up are super interesting. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also just have to look at the top tier. And that's where I think Shay is like the one, you know, clear number one star that you have on that team. And then there's a severe, you know, drop off from him to Dort or Basley.
Yeah,
or
Poku.
Sure. But you're absolutely right that in the future, that drop off is going to diminish, presumably. But the fact that we don't know that yet, that's what makes me put them just outside the top five. Realistically speaking, if we were to do this fully saying, well, you know what, screw known commodities, they would be number one for both of us. And it wouldn't even be close. Because, like you said, 17 draft picks. It's insane. They would. Let's look at the process. The Sixers got two picks right in terms of Joel and Ben when it came to stars.
Yeah.
The Thunder could hit on two of them and then bust on the remaining 15.
Right.
And they would just add two top-tier guys to Shea, Lu Dort, Darius Basley, and whatever Poku becomes, and that would be tremendous.
Yeah.
The odds are, no pun intended, in their favor.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I just cannot sit here and look at Zion and Luka, for example, and go, well, I take a question mark over those guys.
Yeah.
So I'm just not there.
And that's why I had the Pelicans number one on my list. So let's wrap
up. Totally get that.
Let's wrap up with them because, yes, it starts with Zion, clearly. Like, what the development that he's shown this year as point Zion in particular and what he's doing around the rim, like his historic rate of scoring around the rim, it's clear that this guy is just, he's living up to the hype that he came into the league with. I think the thing that, already I think you would put Zion a higher tier than SGA, but one of the things that separated the Pelicans from the Thunder in my mind was the Pelicans also have a Brandon Ingram who is, not on the caliber of Zion, but still an all-star level player, and they have him locked up for, four more years after this. Still super young. You can confidently build around Ingram and Zion for now, and if you decide at some point that Ingram isn't the right number two piece next to Zion, I don't think you have any trouble trading a Brandon Ingram for a ton of value elsewhere.
Right. So this is the thing for me, right? I think Zion and Luka are super close in terms of value. Mm-hmm. I have Luka over Zion at this point, but I think they're super close. Mm-hmm. What concerns me about Zion is the playing style and the injury risk still.
Fair. I mean,
that's just not going to go away. And I hope to be wrong every single day for the next 15 years. And by year 15, he has a great, career that isn't hampered by injury by any stretch whatsoever. It would be fantastic. But this is still a 6'7 dude who carries a 280-pound frame. Mm-hmm. That concerns me, and that just draws out like that process for me. And that's why I have them as number two as well. Good Lord, what if that goes wrong?
Yeah.
What if that weight suddenly creates some knee issues and just derails his entire career? Knock on wood that doesn't happen, of course. But if it does, oh boy, I mean, where do you go from there? I mean, sure, you pivot to Ingram, but he's not a number one guy, I don't think. I think he's pretty good set up in this role, I guess a number two guy. But like, where do you go from there, right?
Yeah. Oh no, it's entirely contingent on Zion staying healthy. This thing goes belly up. But I will say, I mean, they have some other interesting young pieces in Alexander Walker, Kyrie Lewis Jr., Jackson Hayes, Lonzo Ball. We'll see what happens this summer, whether they decide to re-sign him.
Najee Marshall?
Yeah, who's been very good.
Yeah.
I think the two things that give me, other than Zion's health, The two things that worry me to some extent, we talked about Eric Bledsoe last episode, but how they figure out how to get out of him, because he is just such a bad fit with the rest of that team. And then also, Steven Adams has been good for them this year, and he's only signed for two more years. It's not like a cap-crippling contract by any means, but is he the right piece next to Zion, or you know, do you want a more modern-day stretch five? How do you figure out? Or like, does Jackson Hayes just develop into that player and you don't have to worry about it? I don't know. But you know, figuring out kind of the pieces to put around Zion and Ingram. But to their credit, they also, you know, it's not like OKC. I was looking for the exact number of draft picks that they have coming up, but I couldn't find it quickly. But, you know, they also have a ton of additional draft capital coming their way. The first from the Lakers this year. 3 seconds coming this year as well. 2 seconds next year. A swap from the Lakers. A first for the Lakers in 2024. First from Milwaukee in 25 and 27. Plus a swap in 26. So they don't owe any of their own picks. So they've got basically like two first-round picks in most of the upcoming drafts. That, you know, they, like OKC, are just going to have a ton of opportunities to add more talent to this roster.
Mm. I think that's why they end up letting Lonzo Ball walk.
Interesting.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think they want to retain him, but I also think they realize that it seemed like New York, which has been putting connection to Lonzo Ball, they have so much money to offer, and they probably don't mind playing a little bit more than market value right now because they anticipate certain improvements from Lonzo because he's so young. And that's where they might go, yeah, you know what? We can take this dip of losing Lonzo because we can always pivot because of the amount of draft picks we have. We have Kyra Lewis. We have Nikhil Alexander-Walker. All those guys you just mentioned. And theoretically, what if you package those guys like Nikhil and Kyra and Jackson Hayes and some of the draft picks? You could get something really good from that. I don't think they're super scared to lose Lonzo.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would be devastated if they lose him. He's another one, like John Collins, where I think, assuming the offer isn't, like, assuming no team, like, gives him an outrageous contract, I don't know, I could see them wanting to keep him just to trade him later.
Yeah, that's another point. I think maybe that's also one of the subplots that we're going to be seeing this year just because of the weak market. Mm-hmm. That teams are just going to go, oh, you know what? Let's retain certain guys even though we don't want them, and then we can flip them later. The concern there being, of course, that restricted free agents like Lonzo, like John Collins, and hell, even Lauri Markkanen in Chicago are like, nope, that's not good enough for us. We don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah. I think this was a fun exercise. I'm glad we did not share our list beforehand because we had wildly divergent lists, and I'm pleased that we had so much disagreement for once. But yeah, we'll see what happens. The lottery is going to change a lot of this, and we'll revisit this conversation in a couple months. But in the meantime, thank you as always for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You'd also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Morten, feel better, my man.
Thank you, man. Later.